Well, good morning. My name is Beth. I'm a compulsive eater. And I'm honored and privileged to be up here. Thank you all so much for being here at 8:15, early bird. I really appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to facilitating this and see how higher power works through all of us in this session.
Good morning. I am a compulsive eater. My name's Loretta R.
Hi, Loretta.
Hi, good morning and welcome, everybody. Am I speaking first? You are. Good. I just wanted to introduce myself. And again, as Beth said, thank you all for being here this morning.
So I hope you're all here for the workshop, Act Your Way into Right Thinking, turning negative thinking into positive action. This topic is pretty near and dear to my heart because, being a compulsive eater, negative thinking is a large part of our disease. And in our Forever Abstinent book, as we hear the tools every time we attend a meeting, we believe that negative thinking is a large part of our disease. So we're learning one day at a time to abstain from negative thinking. And my sponsor frequently tells me, well, we need to act our way into right thinking. And this is a program of action. A personal example that really gets me every morning, I've been dealing with chronic fatigue for years and congestion and getting sick all the time and waking up. Let me say, I call my sponsor at 6:20 in the morning, but I wake up at 6:16. So I'm always groggy, and I'm just like, oh, there's a whole day ahead of me. And there are some days I'm just full of a lot of self-pity. And, you know, I want my sponsor to be like, oh, it's okay that you're sick. Or, oh, you know, you don't have to go to work today if you don't feel like it. And no, she's like, you know, she's gentle, and she uses program wisdom. And she's like, well, you know, you need thinking that you're going to feel better may or may not change your attitude, but you've got to act your way into right thinking. You've got to take action. And I'm going to discuss different ways that I take action to get out of my negative thinking and using the steps in each of that. And so taking the steps is an action verb. We take steps. We move one foot in front of the other, and that is some action. And in the big book, there's a lot of, you know, literature on taking action. There's a whole chapter on into action and encourages us not to rest on our laurels. Steps 1, 2, and 3, they're not like direct action, but they are action steps. I mean, it teaches us how to be aware, teaches us acceptance, and, you know, making a decision is an action. And then 4 through 12 are physical movement actions, depending on what action you take. And sometimes it is very difficult to think my way into right action, but when I act as if, I'm able to act my way into right thinking. And so I'll go through the steps and how I take action. So I'll read each step at a time and then discuss how I use different behaviors and tools to change my way of thinking. So step 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. What do I do when I'm powerless? I say a prayer. Action doesn't mean leaping from one building to the next. Just saying a prayer is getting out of myself. In my powerlessness, I accept that I'm human and I'm flawed and I need help. I also make phone calls. I reach out to newcomers or fellows in program and recognize I don't have to be alone. All of us are powerless, and that's why I value this fellowship, because of that sense of belonging. We are here together, primary purpose, to continue to carry the message to compulsive eaters, and we all belong. Step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. You know, there's a book out there called Came to Believe, and literature is a big part of our program. And so utilizing step 2, I am able to acknowledge that there is a power greater than myself. And through the stories in the big book, or the stories in Came to Believe, the stories people share in meetings, to see them recover and to see recovery as a whole is a power greater than myself. You guys are a higher power because of your recovery. My higher power is my own definition, as I came to believe my higher power. But I am lifted by your recovery. That's why I come here today. That's why I come to do service. Thank you. Another way I recognize that there's a power greater than myself is making a gratitude list. That's a common part of our program that many people take action in. And when I list out the gratitudes of God's blessings and even challenges in my life, I'm like, yes, my God is with me all the time, whether it's a challenge and a learning opportunity or a blessing and a joy and a provision. Coming to meetings is another action step as I come to believe that a power greater than myself is with me, with us, with this fellowship. Step three, made a decision to turn our wills and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So making a decision is an action step. I mean, I can ponder back and forth in my head, should I not, does he love me, does he love me not? You know, but making a decision is, yes, I'm going to get out of bed, or yes, I'm going to trust my higher power in all of my needs for today. And again, how do I make a decision? I pray. I take time to pray and let my higher power inspire me. When I wake up in the morning, I say the third prayer pretty much instantly, and 90% of the time, I don't feel like saying it, but I do it because it starts off my day higher powered. Acceptance and surrender are also key pieces to turning my life and will over to higher power. I'm turning my food every single day, weighing and measuring. I've heard this kind of coined phrase, weighing is like praying and measuring is like surrendering. And when I do that, I'm turning my life and will and food over to God. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory. That is an action step. Sometimes it takes a long time to continue and complete that action. Other times it's a shorter inventory if we've done it multiple times. And that helps me to really peel back those layers. The inventory is, you know, it's not about the food, it's not about necessarily the person that harmed me or harmed them, but it's what is that deep underlying issue that provoked me to react the way I did. And you know, I do that a lot with the 10th step inventory too, but the 4th step inventory really takes on looking at the issues. And there's many different 4th step inventories. There's a workshop today on the big book inventory. We have a new literature out there with an 8 columns inventory. We have our inventory questions. There's so many different ways to do an inventory, and the most important part is just take action. Step 5, admitted to our God, ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. That is taking action. You know, it's getting out of myself. It's talking to another person. It's having a conversation with God. When I do reach out to other people, it takes courage. It takes willingness. And then when we're done with the 5th step, we recognize we're not alone. We don't have to hold on to our secrets. We don't have to hide anymore. We are honest. We are open. We're willing. And there's so many promises and sense of freedom that comes from that. When I gave my 5th step away, in different eras of my life, it was very freeing to be able to know that I don't have to hold on to these guilts and secrets. I actually shared an amend with my sponsor this morning, and I was able to, you know, get it out of my system and have the support and know that, you know, she didn't beat me up or she didn't shame me. I was guided in the healthiest actions that I could take in order to be happy, joyous, and free. So moving on to step 6, after taking the inventory and then sharing it with another person, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Sometimes I feel like step 6 isn't really an action step. You're not talking to somebody. You're not necessarily writing something down. But it's a prayer. It's a conversation. Sometimes it could be writing a letter to God. Every so often, I recognize my character defects, and I list them out, and I say, God, you know, I'm willing, and I need some help because, you know, I might feel naked and emptied inside if I actually let go of this character defect. Sometimes if I still struggle with, am I doing enough, I write down my character defect or the problem I'm struggling with and put it in a God box and just give it to God, and I know I'm, quote, doing something. And prayer is an action. And I've said that again and again. You know, an action is not necessarily jumping into something. An action might be pausing and holding back and not reacting. Sometimes it helps us to refrain, and then we don't have to make amends later. So it really is an important lesson I've learned in this program is to pause. Step seven. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. And so that humbleness is a very neutral, accepting state. Sometimes I struggle with the word humble or the word meekness because I say, oh, it's weak, and I don't like to be weak. I want to be strong. I want to be in control. I want to be in charge. I want to be brave, Beth. And, you know, we're all on the same bus. We're all together. We are all children of our higher powers, and we just accept our imperfections as we work this program, and we're all human, no worse, no less. So when I humbly ask God to remove my character defects, I'm taking action by having a conversation with God and surrendering and trusting. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. That clearly is an action. We're writing those down. A lot of those come from our four-step inventory. Throughout the day, the week, the year, we may need to make another list. But that writing piece, which is one of our tools, is very helpful to get out of myself and look at what is my responsibility in this issue and what was the other person's responsibility. And then in step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. This takes a lot of courage. It is a very definite action step. I'm going to another person and I am making amends. But it's not necessarily a full-out confession because we don't want to injure them or others. So we say what our piece of the issue is, and we acknowledge it, and we make amends as in a change of behavior. It's not just in a confession or an apology, but how am I going to change my behavior? And that's why step 10 is so important, because it helps me to look at my behaviors. I mean, step 4, 5, 6, and 7 are also those core behaviors, you know, whether it's greed or pride or fear or sense of not enough or distrust. Those are underlying layers, like, you know, the base of the iceberg. That little tip is maybe the food or maybe the action or maybe the reaction to do that. So I just feel really honored to be in this program because I can take responsibility for my actions. We are learning how to look at what's deep within and not place the blame on other people. And so step 10 is continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. You know, I've been talking a lot about the inventory, and in the A 12 and 12 in step 10, it talks about the spiritual axiom is that when we're disturbed, it's pretty much 100% something the matter with us. And I don't like that. I mean, and that's definitely a spiritual axiom, because if it's an environmental axiom or a man-made axiom, it'll be like, well, because I'm disturbed, it's everybody else's job to make me feel better, or I'm disturbed because of you. That's probably a Beth axiom. But a spiritual axiom is when I'm disturbed, there's something the matter with me. And the inventory is a daily action. I don't always do a written inventory at night or in the morning, but frequently I do spot checks inventory. When I'm disturbed, I'm like, all right, what's going on? And I continue to peel back those layers. Every day when I do my writing and my food, I write down at least 3 gratitudes where I've seen my higher power with me in the day. And for me, that's kind of a mini inventory. You know, it allows me to think through my day. And the gratitudes aren't always happy, but it's just an acknowledgement of the blessings God continues to provide for me every single day. And step 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. For me, step 11 is a really crucial action because it is bonding that relationship with my higher power daily, moment by moment. Different ways that I seek out relationship in prayer and meditation is through prayer. In the morning, I get up and I make my phone calls and I have a daily meditation reading and I read it and I pray. I have an acronym that I use for prayer, ACTS, 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 your way into right thinking, adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication. So basically to adore, to praise my higher power. Confession, you know, saying, you know, God, I'm sorry for these actions I did yesterday or I'm obsessing about or my distrust in you. Thanksgiving, you know, the gratitudes, what am I thankful for? And then finally, the supplications that I need prayer for. I need to pray, please help these people. And it's important for me to see that that's, I mean, it doesn't matter when it occurs, but it's kind of at the end. Because so often I pray for what I want. I'm like, God, help me, I want blah, blah, blah. Or God, help this person so they can blah, blah, blah. But when I adore God first and recognize the power and the love and the grace that my higher power has for me, it sets my prayer to be more thankful than it does, I want, please give me. Another prayer and meditation, at night I have another meditation reading and I read through it and I pause. Sometimes I take 20 minutes, other times I take 2 minutes. A few years ago, or even back in college, I would then write down, you know, what did I hear my higher power say? And maybe 2 or 3 sentences. And I never heard an audible voice, but, you know, just kind of what was going through my head at the time. And it was amazing to see the different word usage and the tone of voice my higher power used on me, for me, than what I would have written for myself. I mean, it was a lot of benevolent grace and self-acceptance and love and, you know, correction here and there. But, you know, I'm such a self-correcting kind of person. But my higher power is much more gentle and accepting and loving. And I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful I'm not God because it would be very, very challenging life. Not only for myself, but everybody around me. Another tangible thing I do to connect with my higher power, and I've done this for a long time. I taught English in Japan back in 2002, and I was very lonely, and I was reading some books about connection, and one of the suggestions was having a placemat for yourself and placemat for your higher power. And that really, you know, invited me to have a meal with my God. And, you know, occasionally I'd like talk out loud, "So God, how was your day?" You know, or "What did you do?" And, you know, of course, you know, I didn't really have another conversation, but, you know, it really got me in the mindset that I'm not alone. My higher power is with me. This meal, this abstinent meal, is a blessing, and my higher power wants me to be in relationship with him. Another thing is just having a candle on the table. When I light the candle and I look at the flame, it's just a good reminder for me of my higher power's presence. Sometimes I have like a figurine on the table that I kind of associate with higher power. Like my dad gave me this father and daughter figurine, and you know, and I associate that with my heavenly father and my personal dad. But it's just kind of a good reminder that I am loved. And then like another action is like a walk. Sometimes when I'm depressed and frustrated, you know, I go for a walk and I have initial, you know, contact and discernment and engagement with my higher power. Sometimes I have like a Bluetooth and I plug in a meeting and that just helps me. Having that walk gets my blood flowing, my body moving, and gets me out of myself and my negative thinking. And finally, last but not least, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And I mean, that sums up action. I mean, carrying the message is action. By working steps 1 through 11, we're really looking at who we are, how our higher power works in our life, and how we can be of fellowship and service to others. And so, you know, we continue to carry the message. And it's just, I wrote here, action, action, action. It's what we do. We're service. Coming here today to the conference is service. Leading meetings is service. You know, we've got a tool that talks about service. Service is abstinence, the greatest service to ourselves. Service is coming to meetings on time, being a leader or a speaker, volunteering to be a service person, such as a program chairperson, coffee person, treasurer, secretary, literature person, intergroup representative, etc. Service is see how. And it continues on. Let's all get involved to help see how, because we all know that service is freedom from bondage of self. And that, in essence, is how we have to act our way into right thinking. And being of service, strengthening our meetings, strengthening our recovery, strengthening our program. And when I act my way into right thinking, I'm able to be of service. I'm able to be a loving human that is able to be a channel of God's love. And I'm very grateful for that. So I have a few more things. I mean, I could talk about, I mean, a lot, all the tools are service. All the tools are action statements. We do it. And that's what I love of how this is a program of action. And I really appreciate the tools in See How because they provoke me to take action. And I know that I'm working my program and I am being of recovery, not perfectly, but I do have a program just for today. I have a program. It may not be perfect, but I have a program. So thank you all for being part of my program. And I'm going to stop talking and let Loretta share what she would like to share today.
Good morning again, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to thank Beth for a fabulous presentation. Didn't she do a great job? Yeah. That was really, really good. I'm sitting here kind of reading her notes going, wow, I'm impressed. So I didn't bring any notes with me this morning, so this is going to, can I borrow the book? Yeah. This is going to be hopefully what my higher power would have me say to all of you, and hopefully it will reach one person at least, and someone will be able to utilize what I have. It's funny that Beth would start out talking about the chronic fatigue. I also have chronic fatigue syndrome. And I have been in program for a long time. I came to our sister program back in 1981. It has been a challenge, I'll tell you, because most of the time, what is there for me is exhaustion. And I've been doing a lot of different, you know, I see some people in here with canes, so they might know what I'm talking about. But I have tried, you know, all different, as we do, we try all different therapies, this, that, and the other to get well. The one thing, and I've been in support groups for this, and I have an edge because I have a program today. There are people that are in support groups for the chronic fatigue syndrome, and they have a lot to share with me. However, I've got something that they don't have, which is the steps, which is the power of positive thinking, which is a higher power, which is my abstinence. And it's a little challenging for me sometimes to relate to people that are just talking about the illness. I can't afford to do that. I did have a period of time when I was mostly bedridden and housebound for about 10 years when I lived down here in California. And I will say, of course, it helps my positive thinking to be able to be up and around a lot more and not be in bed all the time. That's through some therapy that I did. And I never stopped working this program. I have had a relapse in the program. However, even when I couldn't get to meetings, before I discovered the phone bridge, because I am on phone bridge exclusively, I never stopped going to the meetings. I never stopped working the steps. I never stopped working with a sponsor. I never stopped being abstinent, although my abstinence got a little out of control. Too much wonderful food is what happened. So step one, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. Today, how I say that step is I admit I'm powerless over food and I have another couple of other addictions. I'm powerless over those. And my life is unmanageable without my higher power. I say my life is unmanageable without you, God, because my life is no longer unmanageable. I can have food in my house, in the refrigerator, and I don't have to go eat all of it. And I didn't used to be able to do that. I had two food items in my house before coming to a program. And the reason for that was because I knew if there was anything more in there, I'd eat it in any time, any day. So I can go grocery shopping and come home and put all that stuff away in the refrigerator and keep it for my weighed and measured abstinent meals, and that's what I do today. And often I don't even think about it. I don't even think twice about it anymore. That is a miracle. And in many other ways, my life has become manageable, but only through my higher power. And I also get on my knees first thing in the morning. I can't kneel on the little carpet I have by my bed anymore, so I have to kneel on the bed because my knees start to hurt. So I've had to change that up a little bit. But there's something about kneeling down, saying my prayers, that is different than just sitting there or standing around talking to God. It does something physiological to me. I don't know what it is. So number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I often say my higher power has restored me to sanity, to a degree of sanity. I'm not completely sane all the time, thank you. But definitely much more sane than I ever have been. And I have had mental illness in this program, mental and emotional illness. And people talk to me today, they say, well, how's your anxiety and how's your depression? I go, I don't really have it today. I'm not saying I never will. I'm just saying that I don't have it today. And I don't know, I don't know what the difference is between what I was experiencing when I went through a really bad time 6 years ago and what is today. I moved back to an area I'm not completely crazy about to be with my mom away from Southern California. And it snows there and it's cold and it rains. And I live in Cleveland, Ohio. And it's gray in the wintertime. However, I seem to be mentally okay. I don't ask me why, except maybe I work these tools, these steps. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as I understood him, and that's what I do. I do that every morning. I just say, God, I say that third step prayer. As Beth was talking about, I'm really not copying her. This is what I do. It sounds like I am. That was a very complete and wonderful presentation, so it's hard not to say some of the same things. God as I understood him, that was a tough one for me. I have had a lot of years in food programs, where I didn't understand God. And so sometimes, I heard somebody say in a meeting once, I pray to God as I don't understand him. And that works for me. That worked for me. I don't have a great grasp on my higher power. I've had to make lists. What would I want in a higher power? If I could fire the higher power that I had and hire a new one, what would I? Well, benevolent, loving. He has a very big lap, like a very big father. I can crawl into it anytime I want. I went down the list, and I've had to do that numerous times in the program, and that has been very helpful for me. I also ask God to show me how he wants. I've had to ask God for how to have relationship with him, and trust that I was being shown. I do believe that God's will for me is these 12 steps. I was told that a long, long time ago by a sponsor I had in another program. I kept going, what's God's will for me? I don't know if God wants me to do this or that, take this job or that job. And he said, thank you. He said, Your God's will for you is to work those 12 steps. I went, oh, I can do that. So there's big things in my life that I'm trying to make decisions on, and I don't know what to do about them. But what I do know is that every day I can work these steps to the best of my ability. That's what I can do. And I don't wake up with the greatest head in the morning, I got to tell you. But once I get on my knees and I start saying my prayers, there is a change that goes on. There is that physiological change, a chemical change. And I must stay focused on my program and my abstinence first and foremost, because that gives me the ability. I can't get rid of negative thinking by myself. I tried. I used to sort of white knuckle, okay, I'm not going to think about this today, or I am going to think about that today, or I'm going to make a list. And I had to give that up to God and ask God to take away my negative thinking like he took away the compulsion to eat. I really can't do too much without my higher power. I am of the belief I wouldn't be breathing and I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be moving without my higher power. It's because he wants me to be here and do this. I made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. I'd done a number of them, and I enjoyed doing the one in Seahaw. I really enjoyed it. I would look forward every day to the writing that I would do. I got to sit outside in the sunshine. This is when I lived down here in Southern California. I had my half an hour that I did around noontime, and I wrote on that inventory, and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote, because I had a lot of junk in there, even after the inventories that I did. Our inventory is deep. And it just carves right into you. And I'm all for that. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. I went through a couple sponsors while I was doing my 5th step. And that was not fun. I got fired once. I had to let go of somebody once because she had relapsed. And I finally found somebody who said, I'll just do the rest of your inventory with you, you know, and we'll figure out if you want me to sponsor you after that. So that's what I did. And it wasn't perfect. You know, I didn't have the same sponsor. I was very scared after going through 2 of them. I was like, oh my God, what's this going to be like? And there was stuff I did not want to share. But it says in the big book that that's the stuff we really need to share. We really need to get that gunk out of us. I had a lot of shaming and humiliating situations happen to me in the disease. And that stuff needed to be shared. I had to ask God for the strength to do it and the willingness. Just grant me the willingness. There's a wonderful prayer when I'm stuck on a step, and I'm going to skip around a little bit. Step 9 has been a real sticking point for me. As I said, I had a lot of shaming, very humiliating behavior in my disease. And I'm like, made direct amends to such people. Does this mean I have to call them? Does this mean I have to try to go see them? Some of them have died. I waited long enough. And I was told if you wait long enough, everybody on your amends list will die. So, anyway, I have written letters, and I didn't want to. And my sponsor has been internally patient with me. Every now and then she would say, okay, where are you at in your 9th step today? And I just go, oh, I'm kind of stopped for a while. And she go, well, why? And we talk about it. She's never been pounding at me because of it. I think she knows that I already do that to myself enough with this stuff. So thank you. 5 minutes left. I told Beth I wasn't going to have enough time. I mean, I wasn't going to have enough to say. Step 6 and 7, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character and humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. It says in the big book that I ask God to remove those shortcomings that stand in the way of my usefulness to him and my fellows. Doesn't say that I ask him to remove the ones that I find objectionable. I have to, you know, I have to maybe walk around with the ones I find objectionable because maybe he doesn't think those are getting in the way too much. But maybe he's working on some other ones. And it also means letting go. I used to have this idea, I want to be this kind of a person, I want to be that kind of a person, and it's a further, deeper letting go. I'm the person today that God wants me to be. And that's, I just kind of go, ooh, sometimes. You know, that's not, I didn't want to be like that, I don't want to look like this, I don't, blah, 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 blah. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. Didn't have too much trouble doing that one. What was tough for me, as I said, was the 9th step. I still have 8 steps sitting in my folder from a couple of years ago. And I've gotten the really sticky, difficult ones out of the way. The really ones that were just, I'd feel red hot shame over. And so now there's some others that are, you know, are less that way. And there was a lifting of shame. There was a lifting of embarrassment. There was a lifting of humiliation when I do this 9th step. And it gets me out of remorse, which is negative thinking, and regret. And I also have an easier time making decisions because that's one of the promises of the program. Is we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. That's a promise. And all those promises in the first 164 pages of the big book, those are positive, positive things. Sometimes it's hard for me to believe that I deserve this program and that I deserve all the promises that are in the program. I didn't used to think I deserved to be abstinent. And I had to have people tell me, you're worthy of being abstinent. You deserve it. Because this is the best way of living that I've ever found. So I continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I have days when I am too tired to write. I am too tired to think. I cannot take my personal inventory. Then I do it the next day. Waiting for the paratransit, I use a wheelchair and I wait for the paratransit to get around. That is a fabulous opportunity to pull out my 10th step and work my inventory. And sometimes I wish I hope that they'll be late so that I can do that. It's very hard for me to do it at home. When I do it at home, I get like 3 items down on my list and then I want to go take a nap. And I often do need a nap. So that's been a struggle for me, that one, that daily inventory. So let's go to 11 and 12, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Prayer, yes, that's never been difficult for me. Meditation used to be not difficult for me. And then I stopped doing meditation for a long time, and now it is a challenge. I have to commit to my sponsor that I'm going to do 1 minute of meditation every day. And I said, if I get more in than that, that's a bonus. Sometimes I do it right before I go to sleep because I go, oh, God, I forgot to do my meditation. So I get like 1 or 2 minutes in there. Sometimes I get a 10-minute meditation. I love it and I enjoy it once I sit down and do it, but I'm like a dog circling around his pillow. You know, it's just like I'll come up with every excuse not to do my meditation. Don't ask me why, because when I'm in it, I love it. And having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, I don't know too many people who have had spiritual awakenings who are negative. Most of the people I know who have had spiritual awakenings are very positive, they're full of light, they're very giving, and these steps promise us that after we work these steps, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, the next thing we do is to try to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I try to practice these principles with everybody. That means people I like, people I don't like. In the 10-step inventory, it says, were we kind and loving to all? It doesn't say to all except your older sister who has never liked you. You know, I have to be nice to her too. And it's changed our relationship. We don't have a close relationship, but it's definitely changed it. And I get on the bus in the morning on the paratransit service. I go, hi, how are you doing? And I get this litany of how this guy is actually doing or this woman. You know, my kids and my husband, I've had people tell me about their sex lives. And I just go, okay. And thank you and have a great day. And thank you for the safe ride. And everybody I meet, I try to do that with. I don't always succeed. The family is the toughest. That family, they put my buttons in place, and they know how to punch them. So I have the biggest challenge with my family, but I do it. And my time is up. Thank you for letting me share. Yes. To qualify, I have been in Sea House since Sea House's inception. I used to live down here when we were O.A. Howe, and then we had to change because OA wrote us a letter and said, you cannot tell people what to do. You cannot have a food plan. And I was here for the crossover. And so I've been in Sea House since 1996. And I do not have continuous abstinence. By the grace of God, if I make it through the 23rd, I'll have 5 years of back-to-back recommitted abstinence, which I'm very, very grateful. I've had like 3rd and 4th chances. And I sponsor. I'm a full-service sponsor. And is there anything else I need to say? Okay. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Loretta. Since I was so nervous to begin with, I forgot to qualify myself. I've been in programs since February 3rd, 2011, with back-to-back abstinence. I had about a 5-pound weight loss, as I was relatively normal weight physically, but my emotional, spiritual was pretty overweight. And I've gotten down to right size, mostly. And this is a program of daily practice, which allows me to continue practicing being physically, emotionally, and spiritually fit. So I'm a food step inventory maintenance sponsor, and love to be of service when I can. So as you can see, you may be looking at your watches, I hope not. You know, we have 45 minutes left, and you're like, oh, what are we going to do with our time? Or, you know, am I getting my money's worth? Well, good news. So I have a passion for doing kind of helping our minds learn through our bodies. And I couldn't, you know, act your way into right thinking without actually doing some physical action. And so what I'm going to have you guys do, and you're welcome to participate in any level that you're comfortable, I'm going to, for the next half an hour, is going to be a pair activity. And what I'd like you to do, after I finish kind of explaining it, is to get into pairs. And in those pairs, you're going to do some mirroring and some listening. And the purpose of this is to be able to express yourself in word language and also in body language, and kind of to get out of that comfort zone of sitting in a chair and just listening, because I really like the kinesthetic movement and learning exercises. So if this is something you're not comfortable or interested in, you know, you're welcome to leave. I won't be offended. But I do encourage you to stay. And if you would rather just watch, you're welcome to do so. But I highly, strongly encourage you, for your own recovery and opportunities to learn and grow, to participate. So the first activity will be you'll get into pairs, and very simply, I mean, it's best if you stand. If you don't, that's okay, but at least face each other, and you're going to express with kind of a sound and emotion kind of how you're feeling right this moment. And the other person is going to mimic that. So I'm totally putting Loretta on the spot. Were you willing to demonstrate?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to. Good job. I'm going to express the sound and emotion of how I'm feeling, and Loretta will copy that and do that.
Joy.
So that was an example. So I'd love for you to get into pairs, and you have about 2 minutes, maybe 2 minutes, or maybe 1 minute, and then have another activity. So when you hear me like get loud, please be quiet, and I'll give you the next direction. Thank you.
No, I need a partner. Oh, do you need a partner? Nice to be partners.
Okay, thank you. If you could be quiet, I'll explain the next direction. in person listening to the recorder, this is going to be about a half an hour activity of loud chaos, which will not necessarily have speakers recording. It's about 47 minutes into the recording. I'll have a stopwatch running, and then I'll let you know when it comes back on. Thank you. Thank you. Can you please sit down so I can give the next direction? Well, it sounds like people are really enjoying themselves, and I'm glad we're able to express how we feel in body language and communication. That's always a great opportunity. So that was just kind of a warm-up exercise. This next exercise will take about 10 minutes or so, where if I would love for person A, person B, person A to tell a story. Whether it's an inventory issue or something that happened to them yesterday or something that they're looking forward to, a memory from childhood, whatever that kind of comes to mind that you feel comfortable sharing with another person. It can be program-related. It doesn't have to be. So that person is going to share for about 3 or so minutes, and I'll try to say, hey, 3 minutes up, and then person B's job is to pick out 3 emotions that they identified. And of course, when you tell a story, there's all sorts of emotions. I mean, it might be happiness, enthusiasm, and joy. I mean, they're all, or there may be, fear and happiness. Use your discretion. But you think of 3 emotions that you really heard. And then your job is not to speak, or reflect, or comment. But like this example of how you just practiced and how Loretta and I just went, your job is to demonstrate those 3 emotions one after the other. So if I hear a story about somebody was afraid of something and then somebody was really excited about something and then somebody was feeling a sense of freedom, I would think of an action for those sound and emotion for all 3 of those emotions. So it might look like this. And so that's all person B's job is for that. And then, so that'll take about 5 minutes, total, person A sharing their story and person B reflecting using only sound and motion. And then we'll switch. Person B will share a few minutes about their story. Person A will listen, come up with emotions, and then express those emotions. And then, because as all good 12-step people, we like to reflect, I'll give you maybe 5 or 10 minutes, time depending, just to reflect on your experience, how you felt as the storyteller, how you felt as the listener, how you felt as the emotion receiver, giver. And then that'll take us to maybe about 20 minutes for sharing at the mic to share about acting your way into right thinking or the activity you just participated in. Are there any questions? Yes.
After we do the 3 emotions that we heard the other person share, would you repeat what that next thing is that we're doing?
Thank you.
Yeah. So person A shares their story for 3 to 5 minutes. Person B listens and acts those 3 emotions. Immediately afterwards, as when they're done telling their story. Don't talk, don't debrief, don't reflect, just share, 3 emotions. And then later you could say, person B, I felt joy, sadness, fear, or something. I mean, you could say those if you want, but the most important thing is just to act, but not respond. And then we switch immediately. After person B shares those 3 emotions, person B tells their story, and person A acts those 3 emotions. So that's 10-minute chunk of time for all 4 of those things to happen, then 10 minutes or so of debrief. How did you feel? What was it like? Et cetera. Did that answer your question? Okay, any other questions? Yes?
Is the debrief between the 2 people?
is the debrief between the two people? Yes. It's then after that debriefing time, we will share the mic. If you'd like to pair up with another pair, you're welcome to do that too. Yes. Together. So the question was, after A shares a story and B does their emotions, do we go to a microphone to share and debrief? No. The answer is between you two partners, and then you can share later if you'd like. Yes?
A, story from the past or what's going on right this second?
A, it's totally up to you. Yeah, whatever's on your mind. Yeah. Any other questions? All right. Let the games begin. I'm going to say 5 minutes, and at 5 minutes, it's kind of, if you haven't switched sides yet, be conscious of that. Thank you.
Selected. Some things I can say.
If partner B has not acted out those emotions, you may want to consider doing that at this time. About halfway through with this exercise. If you want to switch storytellers, please do. And now, if partner A has not acted out those emotions, I may suggest partner A to do that. Okay, if you want to wrap up your conversations and your actions, please. All right, good work. It's so exciting to watch and listen to the murmurs. So can I please have your attention? Can I have your attention, please? Thank you. I'm excited to hear and watch some of the different emotions that you guys were willing to share with each other. Now I thought, and I know some of you have done this already, and we can continue a little bit more, some debrief. And these are some questions that I thought of. You're welcome to talk about other things. And I'm sorry I don't have a list of them printed out. But basically, what was it like to share your story? What was it like to listen to the story? How did it feel to see your emotions being displayed by another person? How did it feel acting out those emotions of somebody else's story? And then the summary question, how can this activity strengthen your program in acting your way into right thinking? So about 5 minutes or so debrief, and then I'll call us to attention. Then we'll have an opportunity for open sharing at the mic. And just a reminder, if you'd like to share, please do come sign on this release. And the sooner you sign, it's better, so you can sign and then come to the mic so we don't have a lot of waiting and stalling and pausing. All right, 5 minutes, go.
Pick it up. I agree, maybe not. but I reject it again.
Attention, please. All right, thank you so very much. I hope you had the opportunity to debrief and to express yourselves because we did have an activity. We don't have hours or, you know, a lot of time to share, but I would love to hear anything you'd like to share, you know, regarding this activity or how you act your way into right thinking, getting yourself out of negative thinking. We have 15 minutes until our workshop concludes, and please come and share. But of course, sign the sign-in sheet. You know, it's probably best if a person shares, and then while that person is sharing, the second person comes and signs the sheet, so it's not a whole lot of time lag. Please come sign in, and I look forward to hearing your shares.
I'm Linda F. Hi, and I'm from Las Vegas, and we kind of had a hairy trip here. Anyway, I'm glad I'm here.
Can you turn around,
Teresa? Oh, sure.
Thank you, good idea. And also, just a reminder, the reason we're signing in is because this is being recorded. It's going to be on our website, so I encourage you to speak program-affiliated language. Thank you.
Okay, the story I told was my feelings about my great niece, which I have feelings about a lot of people, the same one that I just, it just happened to be her. But I was having some feelings about feeling rejected, but I didn't want to say it. I don't ever say it. And all of a sudden, I just thought, if I, by acting it out and doing this exercise, it was like, if by not saying it, I have to keep it. I got to keep pushing it down. And if I say, that hurt my feelings, what you just said to me, and to say it out loud to that person, then I don't have to carry it around. But the thing is that the realization was, if I don't say it and I keep to myself, I'm hurting myself. If I'm willing to say it, then, you know, either I'm going to confront that person, they're going to say, oh, I'm sorry, or they're going to say, you know, well, that's what I think, or whatever. At least I got it out. It's just so weird that I keep stuff hidden, thinking that if it's hidden, then I won't get hurt by it. And the truth is that by hiding it, I do get hurt by it, even though I never say it out loud to that other person. And so I think it's hidden. It's not hidden from me. I just push it down until finally I have to explode. So that's what I wanted to share.
Thank you so much.
Hi, I am Alicia, compulsive eater from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hi, Alicia.
And the story that I decide to share has to do with my mother. I met with her yesterday, and she went on to share with me that she and my brother, who share the same household, have lost their little puppy last week. And my mother proceeded to tell me several times that she had more sadness when the puppy died than when my dad died. My dad died about 8 years ago. And I was startled to hear my mother repeating herself and telling me that. Because of program, I am able to allow my mother to have her own feelings and not take them personal, because in my family, everybody is enmeshed with everybody's feelings. And my first reaction was, how dare you say such a cruel thing? But her feelings are her feelings and has nothing to do with the relationship that I had with my dad and the relationship that I choose to have with her. She's entitled to her feelings, and I get to be a grown-up because of program and allow her to be in her higher power's hands and allow myself to continue that relationship that I have with both of my parents, one deceased, one not, and because of program, I am able to have kindness and acceptance for her. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Christina, compulsive overeater from Los Angeles. How are you guys doing? I liked this. It was really great. My experience was that I came in this morning with a really, really heavy heart. And in order to, with the first exercise that we did, my emotions were I just wanted to be real, although at the same time I kind of wanted to be fake and be like, oh, I'm happy like, you know, everybody else, but I really wasn't. I was feeling really heavy this morning, so it was good in the fact that I got to be real and I got to see it reflected and mirrored back at me. And just having that happen was like a weight lifted off of me. And I don't know exactly how that happened, but I think that plus the being able to share the story itself had like a gamut of different feelings. And that itself was, it was great to just be able to share, really, to be able to share the story. And this whole weekend was was kind of a touch and go. I had paid for this weekend, and then I got a really good offer for a job, and the job was supposed to start this morning at 9, and I just prayed, and I said, God, whatever your will is for me, if I'm supposed to have this job, which is going to pay me like a lot of money and save me from these things that are going on in my life right now, or if I'm supposed to go to this weekend and you're going to work out the money a different way, then you do whatever you need to do. And that's like a first for me, because I'm like the one that like makes everything happen. And I would have made the decision, and I really did just turn this weekend over to God. And this is what he gave me. So I'm grateful to be here, because this is what he wants for me. He wants me to be spiritual. He wants me to have a relationship with him. And it's this time around, meaning I started coming to this program in 2001, and I was here till 2008, and I left. And I've only been back, I'd say, about 3 months now. But I see this, you know, complete change between me and the relationship I had with God before. Not the same. He's my buddy now, and he really, really, really talks to me, and I feel it, and it's awesome. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. I'm Sandra, and a compulsive eater from Los Angeles, Studio City.
Hi.
I wanted to share the experience of coming in here thinking that I was just going to sit and be administered to, you know, just heal me, let me hear those healing words. So when Beth first announced the exercise, it was who am I going to be with? And I was sitting right next to someone, so that was obvious. And then I was like, oh, what story? Because of course I need the perfect story. But recovery has taught me I don't have to have the perfect story. I just have to have a story, and I don't have to do it perfectly. I just get to do it. And it moves, it's getting me out of my comfort zone, because I can isolate here with all you people by just sitting and listening, and that's what I'm supposed to do, right? No. And at the workshop last night, the opening workshop, it was the same thing. I went in there because they told us, it was on how to get the most out of the convention. And so I want to get the most. I always want more, and the most is good, better. So I sat there, and then there was an interactive exercise like this. You have to find a partner and pair up. What is all, no. And it, but I did it. I wanted to bolt, but I just did it. You know, shaking even now, sharing this, there's a little bit of shaking going, but it's okay. I get to recover, get out of my comfort zone, do something different. Might be good to breathe too. To do it differently. I don't have to just be safe. And thank you all. And thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Hi, my name is Ernestine. I'm a compulsive overeater from Claremont, California. And I want to say thank you to the panel. I didn't want to do this. I didn't want to do this, and my partner didn't want to do it, and because I have defiance and rebellion, and I don't like being told what to do. I came in here to sit down and listen, and that's what I want to do. And and I just said, okay, all right, we'll do it. We'll do it. And we did it. And I have always had a hard time finding and understanding what my feelings are. I've been a people pleaser all my life, and whatever you want me to be, that's what I will. And then, of course, I got to 210 pounds and didn't like that, and you know, came to the program off and on. I'm learning. If I stay abstinent, and that to me, what you said about abstinent being the most important thing in my life, it is so true. It is so, so true. Abstinence and talking to my higher power the first thing in the morning is helping me. I can't even express how much it's helping me, but it's a lot. And it was kind of neat to see someone telling their story and then trying to see what it was that they were saying, and me being able to express it without words. And actually, it was kind of fun. Okay.
So we have 3 to 4 minutes left. So we do welcome any last minute shares, but just giving you a heads up. Thank you.
I'm Yvonne. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Yvonne.
And this was so good. It was taking action. And I like something physical. I have been in program a long time and never heard of that exercise. And, you know, the other person shared with me, and I will probably carry that, her story with me and learn and experience from her story. Telling my story was very exciting for me, because it was kind of on the inventory, and that great, great freedom that comes when you make an amends. And in that particular story, the results were the people wrote back how they loved me and how they understood, and thanks for the apology. And so I just thought I'd share that, and thank you to the panel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm Jen Nan from Oklahoma, and a compulsive eater. I had a beautiful experience sharing with my partner in this conference, and one of the wonderful gifts of it is that I now feel very close to her, and that's what I love about this. We get right down and share our soul stuff with each other, and we cut through a lot of the unimportant stuff and really get down to being close with each other, and that was beautiful. But one of the main things I learned was, after it was over and I was sitting there thinking about the process, and what came up for me was what a perfectionist I am. And my husband and I just bought a very small travel trailer, and it's not something I was really sold on, but I thought I would kind of give in this time and let him do something he's wanted to do for 30 years. Anyway, so we took off on July the 5th for a trip, and we've been in a 17-foot space, that's the kitchen, the bedroom, the bathroom, the dining room, for 14 days, I guess. And we're not used to being that, you know, shoulder to shoulder. And about 3 days ago, my husband had a meltdown. And it was just something I've seen before many times, but I just really irritated me, and I had a right to be irritated, and the way he behaved and blah, blah. But, you know, I as I look back on it now, this is not what I even shared with my partner, because the other stuff came up, but I look back on it. I added this up. Out of 436 hours that we've pretty much been together, for every single minute awake and asleep, he had a 15-minute meltdown. Oh, my gosh. So, and of course, I didn't. But thanks for letting me share. And I just love
this. Thank you. All right. Well, thus concludes our workshop, Act Your Way Into Right Thinking, Changing Negative Thinking into Positive Action. Thank you all for your participation. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your conference.